Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I love everything about TJ Friedl, to be quite honest. He's a fun baseball player to watch. He's a fun baseball player to root for. His story is well known, where he fell through the cracks a little bit, didn't get drafted. Himself admitting he didn't really even know he was draft eligible. The Reds circled back, found him, signed him because they had enough money to sign him to a bonus that was more than any other team could offer at that point. And has kind of perpetually been this overlooked member of the Cincinnati Reds throughout his career, despite the fact he's actually put up some half-decent numbers for what he is, which is a left-handed hitting guy who can get on base, play defense, and run a little bit. TJ Friedl won the game for the Reds tonight. The Reds won a game tonight. We are recording on the night of the 24th. It's Monday. They just started a series against the Texas Rangers. And while everything looked like it was a complete dumpster fire for the seventh consecutive game for most of tonight, the Reds fought their way back, got patient at the plate, walked their way into a tie game, and then Friedl got a big hit to score Jonathan India to win the game in the series opener against Texas. So that's kind of where we are at this episode of Walks Will Haunt as we begin to break down what's been going on with the Reds for the last week and a half-ish. We had to take a little bit of a break last week, but we're back to get caught up on that. I start with TJ Friedl and all of the effusive praise that is lobbed on him because he is quite literally the perfect platoon outfielder who bats eighth or ninth for a lot of really good teams and steals a lot of bases for them and does a lot of the little things and the dirty work that you need to have to get through a 162-game season and win a bunch of baseball games. He's hitting second for the Reds right now. And with Jonathan India on second base in a six-game losing streak in the bottom of the ninth, in tonight's game, Friedl was bunting with one strike. The number two all-hitter was bunting for this Reds team. And fortunately, it didn't go as planned. And he finally got a hit or a pitch to hit later in that plate appearance and turn it into something good. But it just kind of jumped off the pages to me as how hard this Reds team is having to do absolutely every single possible thing right to just even have that chance of winning. You know, they haven't hit a home run since the signing of the Magna Carta. It's been a rough go of things. And tonight's win aside, which was a breath of fresh air, it still seemed like they almost backed their way into winning this game. You know, they still didn't get the big hit. That's where we are at this point of the season. It's been a frustrating run of form. I'm Wick, by the way, hosting Walks Will Haunt again this week, joined once again by the Arkansas Reds fan, Mitchell Clark, as well as BK. Guys, let's just jump right into it. Like, let's talk about how frustrating the last, I mean, we could talk about the last 30 years if you wanted to, but let's stay focused to the last, 15-ish games that the Reds have played. Arf, what are your thoughts on how we set up this podcast to walk into, despite the fact the Reds snuck a win in under the deadline before we got started?
Yeah, it's that, you know, it kind of reminds us of the Aprils of the last few years, to be honest. We're unfortunately kind of used to this. You know, as you were talking about how they backed into the game, I saw a stat earlier I guess before the Friedel game winner, the Reds were 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position and didn't have a home run, yet had 6 runs. So you talk about backing your way into a win. That's pretty much what they did. But you know what? After 6 in a row, many in blowout fashion, you know what? We'll take it. You know, I watched quite a few of the games last week while you were gone. You know, I was pretty optimistic after last Monday, losing Hunter Green after the third inning and then steamrolling Tampa Bay. And I think it was 8-1. And so I was, you know, feeling pretty good with Nick Lodolo coming in, and then things obviously went south pretty quickly. So it was nice to be able to start this podcast off with a win, at least.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Nick Lodolo, for the second consecutive game, just didn't have it today. And that's something that we've not seen much from him at all throughout the, you know, the course of his professional career with the Reds through the minor leagues, and even dating back to some of his starts with TCU when he was in college as well. There's a reason why he was twice a first-round pick. He was a first-round pick out of high school, didn't sign, and then eventually the Reds drafted him in the first round a couple years later. The dude throws strikes and has ridiculous movement on his pitches. We've never really seen back-to-back outings the way we've seen from him. And so on top of all the other things out there, you know, if all the lack of clutch hitting, the lack of power, the lack of scoring runs, the overriding theme that the Reds know they have to manufacture runs at all costs. So their number two hole hitter, who had already had a hit earlier in the game, is bunting with a runner on in the bottom of the ninth inning in a tie game. Nick Lodolo was not one of those things that we ever thought we were going to need to worry about. I mean, obviously, it's his second year in the big leagues. He's still a young pitcher. There are going to be some bumps and hiccups. But for the second consecutive outing, he got really just manhandled by the entire Texas Rangers lineup. And when one of the very, very, very precious few things that we've been able to count on with this Reds team goes that wrong, it's like, wow, it makes all the other errors out there in their roster building, which they will claim are just pauses as we wait for the future to show up, that much more glaring. BK, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely pretty rough to see Lodolo kind of struggling like that. You know, I just looking at his even his big league career so far, you know, going into his previous start, he had never given up more than 5 earned runs in a big league game. And, you know, he gives up 8 the last one, and was it 6 tonight? But, you know, credit to the offense for coming out and pulling out the win to kind of make this a better podcast and a more, you know, our mood a little bit better. But, you know, it's I think that, you know, I wonder if he's kind of feeling the pressure. I know that he's been talking to reporters and stuff after the, you know, Hunter Green extension, which we'll touch on. But, you know, I think that's kind of been the talking point with kind of the big three starters, and that, you know, I think they've talked extension with Graham Ashcraft some, yeah, obviously Hunter Green just got his. And, I think, you know, Lodolo was probably is kind of wondering why he's not in that conversation more. And, you know, I think that I it makes me wonder if it's maybe just getting to him a little bit, but
it very well could be that's a good point to point out. It also was not ideal conditions tonight. I think it's a little bit chilly back in Cincinnati tonight. I think there's a frost advisory, yeah. For later on this evening. You know, and again, as we mentioned, he's made what, 25-ish starts as a big leaguer so far in his career. There are going to be these bumps in the road. And also, very much worth pointing out, it's the Tampa Bay Rays and it's the Texas Rangers, two of the best teams in baseball, that he was up against in these last two starts. And, you know, I think that kind of highlights a little bit of the opposite end of why we approached and scheduled this podcast with such animosity before they once again snuck in a win under the deadline before we got started here. We're fresh off getting swept in a 4-game series by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And when you talk about where the Reds are and you list all the reasons why they are where they are, to see where the Pittsburgh Pirates are in the standings and what they just did to the Reds in their most recent series, it's almost enough to make you circle back to all of the suggestions as to why the Reds aren't good, why they didn't spend money, why the roster is constructed the way it is, and why we're being asked to be patient for the development of a series of prospects, and throw it right back in the face of whoever just said all that. Because losing to Pittsburgh has become a habit for this franchise, to be quite honest. I wish I could remember all the numbers off the top of my head as to how often they've lost on the road in Pittsburgh. Obviously, the inability to rack up wins against a team in 2021, the last time the Reds were even attempting to begin to compete at all, was what basically was the last nail in the coffin for that particular season. And since then, they've been frankly unable to compete with their peers at the basement of the NL Central since then. So watching Pittsburgh jump out to an incredible start and to top the division for the time being, not that any of this I think is super sustainable for them. It's just hard to watch a team that has by design set themselves up to be in the doldrums for another season bust through in surprise and have all the breakout and the fun and have fans in the stands in the stadium in Pittsburgh for the weekend series against the Reds, and then tune in tonight to watch Great American Ballpark and see about 9 people out there as the Reds continue to stumble and not even be able to keep up with the Pirates. It's just kind of a stark comparison for where things were. So, with all that filed away, I think it was certainly a very refreshing chance to see finally some calls, some pitches, whatever you want to talk about, for how the Reds worked their way back into it. Back-to-back bases loaded walks in the 8th inning from guys who don't necessarily take a lot of walks. You just needed to see the Reds get a little bit of luck for the first time in a while, and I think they got that tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's – and, you know, when you look at the – you brought up the attendance, you know, it's pretty – it seems pretty grim, right? I mean, even last week, you know, when the weather was beautiful, they had – you know, they won that first game against the Rays, and Hunter Green was out there. You know, that night it was a little chilly, but, you know, Hunter Green's pitching in front of one of the lowest – I think, was it the lowest crowd in GABP history that night? And then, the next night it was, I mean, it's just, there's just any and all kind of momentum that they had, over that first series or two, that first homestand is just completely gone. And I mean, I can't imagine what this is going to look like in September. Just given just kind of the landscape of things here, it's kind of wild.
BK, you mentioned that you had Jason Vosler's stats pulled up right before we get started. Jason Vosler homered in 3 consecutive games for the Reds in that first week and a half of the season. And I honestly don't know, and I can't say for certain because there's no way to actually project that out there with any sort of statement of fact. But of the 7-15 record that the Reds walked into tonight's game with, where would they be without Jason Vosler? Like, it would really look a whole lot like the 3-18 start from 2018, right?
You look at what they did too with him. They DFA'd him today. If you know you haven't caught up on the news, and that first homestand went great. You know, he had 6 hits in that first homestand over 5 games, but you know. So after that, though, after that, he was, I clicked it out. So he had 5 more hits in 50 plate appearances, 1 extra base hit after that. So, you know, I mean, just completely fell off a cliff, And yeah, as you said, I mean, we talk about it, you know, how they're trying to kind of move the pieces around, but he still leads this team in home runs at this point. You know, despite 1 extra base hit, not a home run, he hasn't had a home run since that first homestand. He still leads the team in home runs. And so his last one was on April 4th.
That's a tremendous nugget that I had not even noticed myself. That's fantastic.
Yeah. He's still the only guy on the team with 3. So
I mean, like, when was the last time the Reds ever DFA'd their team leader in home runs? Like, has that ever happened?
Oh man, that's we got to get a slider on that.
We got to get Joel on that one, because that's true.
That's a good one.
I mean, so speaking of Jason Foster, who got DFA'd today because of that slump, and they promoted Henry Ramos, which probably needed to happen. I mean, Foster's been in a very deep slump, despite the fact he basically won three games for the Reds of their precious eight victories so far this year. The Reds have not hit a home run since seven games now. It's been seven games. Several of which have been played in Great American Ballpark. It's not like they've been on the road in San Francisco when it's been 40 degrees and breezy either. It's been, you know, the usual opportunities for them to hit home runs with their home ballpark being what it is. Some of the numbers that they've got right now are just they're fun to look at because they are as bad as they are. The Reds currently right now, I've got StatCast pulled up. They've had a 169 hard hit balls, meaning over 95 miles an hour this year. That's tied with the Oakland Athletics for dead last in all of baseball. And the Oakland Athletics set the record, I believe, for the worst run differential through the first 20 games of a season in Major League Baseball history. So that's a fun tidbit to toss out there. The Reds' isolated slugging of 113, which is what it was entering play tonight, which I guess they had Spencer Steer's triple, which pretty much could have been caught in center field, but didn't get caught. That was tied with Detroit for second worst in all of baseball, behind only the Washington Nationals at .092. This kind of power outage is just something that I don't know how to explain. I mean, obviously you look up and down the roster and you don't see a whole lot of guys you expect to hit 40 home runs, but like, they got a lot of guys that you would expect to hit, you know, 15 to 20 here and there. The weather hasn't been terrible. It's not been freezing. We've not seen him out there with like mittens and hoodies on trying to play the game out there. But for whatever reason, they're just not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. And I don't really know what to say about that, because it reaches a point where it becomes kind of a theme. And I think it's become a theme, you know, to circle back to how we kind of, or how I was rambling at the start of this, TJ Friedl's hitting second and has a couple home runs this year, I believe, and he's bunting in the bottom of the ninth with no out and a runner on second base. Like, I don't know where you go from that while you try to bridge this gap between what they have right now and Ellie De La Cruz and Christian Encarnacion Strand and Matt McClain coming up and hopefully figuring out a way to hit 30 home runs down the stretch, right?
Yeah, that, I think that's what's been so tough to watch, is because, like, you know, the bullpen, I mean, they logged a lot of innings last week and kind of kept them in games. Even, you know, the starting pitching was, you know, getting roughed up a little bit. But, I mean, they're scoring like 3-4 runs a game. So it's like, it's not even been that fun to watch, you know, just because they're not scoring runs. They're not hitting the ball hard. I mean, guys like, I mean, Tyler Stevenson hadn't hit a home run all season, and you know he's one that, you know, you expect to show some power, and you know, like you said, our two hole hitter has got two home runs and is bunting in the bottom of the ninth with the guy on. I mean, even Will Myers you'd expect to have a little bit more pop, and he's trailing the vaunted Jason Vossler in home runs this season. So so yeah, that's just been what's so tough. It's like, you know, a lot of people, some of the wins they've gutted out, they talk about how this team fights and stuff, which is true, but it's also like, it can be a drag when you're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. You're only hitting singles, you know, here and there, and scoring a couple runs a game. And even tonight, having to count on a closer's meltdown to score a few runs to even have a chance to win it.
Yeah. Speaking of slide, shout out to Joe Luckup as well. He tweeted 6 hours ago, and I think the Reds did score first tonight, didn't they? I believe they got.
Yes, they did.
They scored first tonight. So this is slightly outdated, but entering play today, the Reds had only scored first in a game six times this year, which is fewest in all of baseball. And they were 3-3 in those games. And, you know, when we talk about the inability to score first and then also the inability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, it's as if when they give up a run to start a game, that's it. You know, and there's no coming back from that because there's nobody who can just literally just like flick his wrists and there's a two-run shot. There's nobody there to do that. And then when you also find yourself down 1-0, 2-0, whatever, it's like you can't even get back into the game, much less take the lead in those games. And it's a really deflating way to approach watching the games of baseball because, you would like to think that there are enough good starters that the Reds have, Nick Lodolo's recent struggles aside, that they will keep you in the game long enough to where every game that's a 1-2 run game, you can begin to work your way back from. But if you just can't get that big hit and you can't hit the ball out of the ballpark either, that's a really tough combination, right?
Right. I mean, it's been, you know, it's been kind of a up and down season as far as that goes. And it's like, you know, it seems like I don't know what exactly their record is in one run games, but you know, I think they're under 500.
They won one tonight, so I think it might be two and six, two and seven at
yeah,
this point.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But so, one and six, you know, that seems like the thing that is really it. But then, you know, one thing that I've noticed over the last week, and I wonder if you guys have too, is, you know, I think we are seeing a lot more like blowout games both ways that, you know, which I don't really feel like we had as much of. Even, you know, that Tampa series where, you know, they won the first game 8-1, but then lost 10-0 and 8-0. You know, like they've had, you know, a couple of other games in that Philly series that were even more lopsided.
Well, the two games before that, I think we won 13-0 and then lost like 12-0 the next day.
Something like that. Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's 14-3.
Yeah.
And so it's like I wonder how much some of that stuff skews the overall numbers, but, you know, I also think it's like it's almost, you know, I know that what they're doing in those games is like, you know, you have somebody like a Luis Sessa or Connor Overton starting that and just, you know, just melting down early, and instead of taking them out and, you know, moving on with it, they're just leaving these guys in to wear it and
soak it up. Yeah.
Eat shit. So,
yeah.
And, you know, it's, but, you know, as you said, Wick, it's like, that's the roster that they built. Like that's what this team is designed to do. It's not designed to be the type of team that can take a hit like that. You know, if the starter doesn't have it, game over.
To be realistic about it, it's the second consecutive year it's been that way too. I mean,
right. They did nothing to address that in the off season
at all. I mean, they stumbled into Brandon Drury, who hit, I think, exactly 20 home runs before they traded him. But he was the only guy who even got the 20 last year. And we're talking Great American Ballpark. Like, and they didn't replace him. And Will Myers hasn't hit yet either. And it's like they, for the second consecutive year, right, we have not seen offense for the Cincinnati Reds. And let's be quite honest, you know, in the long, illustrious history of the Cincinnati Reds, in the good years, they were powered by offense. In the bad years, they were still powered by offense and had absolutely no pitching. You know, the early aughts, even the late 90s, when things kind of started going haywire with this team being a powerhouse in baseball, they still hit. They still hit a lot. They hit the shit out of the ball. They hit a lot of home runs. There was the Dunn and the Griffey years. There was all of those. And, you know, when they didn't win, it was because their opening day starter got DFA'd after having a 6.70 ERA through 12 games, you know, that kind of stuff. So to not see any offense, A, for the Reds with that kind of history, and B, in the ballpark they play in, it's a really, really weird way to watch baseball.
When was the last time a Reds position player prospect came up and actually hit and lived up to kind of his prospect billing outside of India? Friedel, like right now, you know, you have India, Friedel,
Todd Frazier,
Tyler Stevenson's hitting a little bit. You know, his OPS is under 700 though.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I mean, Spencer Steer looks great, but not, you know, was somebody that they brought in last year. But really, you know, when it comes down, like Nick Senzel still can't hit his way out of a paper bag. Barrero, you know, I think that this was kind of the last go around for Jose Barrero before he gets, they start to look for another option there.
He's going to be a depth option very quickly at this rate. Yes.
Seems that way. Seems like that's at least what should happen. And so it's just, you know, they just aren't hitting on any of these guys. And
I mean, yeah, like even some of the,
and that's what they're counting on, right? They're not bringing in guys. They're bringing Will Myers.
Yeah. That's it. But even some of the other high profile or first ish round draft picks they've brought in recent years haven't taken off either. I mean, guys like Matt Nelson, guys like Austin Hendrick, Taylor Trammell, even, like, you know, despite the fact that he looked like a great prospect at the time, they shipped him out. He's been traded twice and still hasn't really found his form hitting at the big league level either. It's like, it's an organizational philosophy that is not produced at the way that we hoped by any stretch of the imagination. And that's got serious ramifications. And so, you know, you look up and you see what the Reds did in their acquisitions last couple of years, bringing in all these new hitting prospects, and hoping that there's something drastically different about the identification process of those players that there was from the guys they drafted that simply have not panned out either. So it's a question. And obviously it's a long game that we're going to have to play if we're going to keep rooting for this franchise. But we got to wait and see how Elliot Dela Cruz and Christian Encarnacion and Strand begin to take it to AAA, which they finally got back on the field within the last week. We've reached the good news portion of the podcast here. Two guys who we're hoping can be big parts of the future, obviously, but at some point, some part of this particular 2023 team later this year are back on the field in AAA Louisville. Matt McClain's hitting the ball very, very well there. But then just hoping guys like Noelvi Marte, Edwin Arroyo, Victor Acosta, guys identified now from outside the Reds organization and brought in, can bring their own blend of how to hit and get to the big leagues with that, since the draft and development strategy or sign and development strategy the Reds have employed over the last couple of years simply hasn't panned out with enough good hitters to make this work so far. So that's it. And so we reached the good news portion of the podcast. So we will touch on the good news that we have seen over the last couple of days before we sign off for this particular week. It's got to start with the Hunter Green extension, you know, signed for 6 years and $53 million, I believe, is the baseline number for that. But with options and escalators and everything else, it could take it to slightly over $90 million. And in theory, buy out, I believe, two of his potential free agent years if everything goes to plan and that's how they go.
That's right.
It's a great deal for a guy who has as much arm talent as I think anybody we've seen with the Reds recently. And a guy who they already invested $7+ million into sign. So to get him to sign an extension is a good sign, considering, you know, oftentimes when you get first round draft picks like that, who get that kind of life changing first check, they might be inclined to ride it out a little bit farther before they start talking guarantees, because they've got that leverage and they've got that money in the bank already. Wasn't the case with Hunter, which to me at least signals that there's a good relationship between he and the Reds, which is always important when you're talking about your best players and your most talented players. It's the first player the Reds have committed to in this next era. And we waited and waited and waited and waited for that. And obviously he got hit by a comebacker the day before they announced it, and they had to push back his next start because it's the Reds we're talking about. But his first outing out since then in Pittsburgh looked like the guy who's the future ace of the staff, the current ace of the staff, even. What are your thoughts on them picking Hunter Green to be that guy? But then I guess more than anything else, that they've got enough money to pick a guy and have a guy finally after all anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's exciting for one. I mean, he was the prospect, I mean, the draft prospect that everybody was excited about. When they drafted him back in 2017, like, you know, everyone was excited about this guy around baseball, not just in Cincinnati. And so, I mean, obviously it took him a little bit longer to get up. Just one, he was coming out of high school, but also had the Tommy John surgery, and, you know, he's dealt with a couple small injuries. But I mean, one thing I think is awesome, like his last three starts in conjunction with that announcement, I mean, he struck out 10 guys against the Braves. You know, he looked great in that start against Tampa before he got hit with that comebacker, and then following that up with his outing against Pittsburgh. I mean, that's, you know, 15 innings and only giving up 4 runs and 18, having 17 strikeouts and only 2 walks. So it's like, there's a lot of hope for the future, you know, after getting kind of roughed up in his first 2 starts and then seeing that contract get signed and their commitment to him, you know, and hearing Hunter's interviews and kind of seeing the way he's talked, like, I don't think he signs that deal without at least some kind of plan for what the Reds have in store. And I, you know, at least gives me a little bit of hope that, okay, they've, you know, they at least have something in store that he's going to be excited about and not just a contract. Because, I mean, I think Hunter comes from, you know, he comes from a pretty well-off family and stuff. So I don't think money was ever that big of an issue for him. But, you know, the fact that he would sign that deal this early in his career with the potential that he has, kind of says something about, you know, the plan that the Reds have.
That would certainly be nice. Yeah. Beak, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, you know, just seeing that this is really the first guy that they've, I don't think they had any money committed past 2024, right?
Yeah, it was Votto and the Moose buyout. That was it.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's exciting to see, just kind of like, okay, here's the first piece of the next, you know, the next team. And, you know, it's really a no. It's a no lose situation for the Reds. I think that, you know, maybe with the escalators, I think it probably leans that in Hunter's direction as far as the, you know, incentives to sign and to pitch well and, you know, help kind of contribute to this next successful team. But, you know, I think it's exactly, you know, if you're the Reds, it's exactly the type of guy you want to invest in. I think that, you know, just everything that he's done off the field with, you know, the Reds Community Fund and just kind of being part of the community, I think has been really, especially for a guy his age, has been really impressive to see. I think he wants that team leadership role. And, you know, I think he's the right guy to do this kind of investment in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, when I look at this particular contract, it's significant because for a franchise that went so austere so quickly, it's them committing money to someone, and to pick him is significant because I think the talent that he's got on the upside level and his ceiling is greater than anybody else the Reds have right now. I also look at it as a contract that's pretty fair market value. Like, it doesn't look like it's an outlandish contract at any point in time. And it could be a steal. The only way it wouldn't be a steal is if injuries, God forbid, knock on everything, begin to start cracking their way into that. But even then, assuming they're not the devastating injury times, even if he misses time and the Reds don't get their money's worth, quote unquote, for a little bit of time through that, I think Hunter Green's got the kind of arm talent where he will never not be tradable through that entire contract, because all he has to do is be healthy again and show he's Hunter Green, and somebody's going to be like, yeah, that's Hunter Green. I want him. So there's nothing – I see no downside in this particular extension is, I think, the best way I can describe
there's it. There's no – yeah, there's no, like, big money there, like, that's going to – you know, if the Reds do or Hunter decide that, you know, this doesn't make sense anymore, you know, that it's not like the having the contract guaranteed money and stuff is going to, you know, make it so he won't be able to be traded. I think it's below market value, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
less than 10 million for
it's
an ace, basically, right?
It's buying out arbitration years and whatever, which means that it's going to be suppressed value anyway. But it's not the Wander Franco contract, which is $200 million. You know, it's maybe 90, but 53, whatever. Like it's every team in baseball has signed somebody to this contract. So it's zero exposure to all of that. And the upside is that it's still the youngest part of Hunter Green's career. And anybody who sees him healthy, he's throwing 103 miles an hour with a slider to boot. Even if he's had two injury plagued years before that, the moment he shows that he's got that still in there, it's an under market value contract as far as I'm concerned. So barring he stumbling into the fact that he finds out he's got Devin Mesoraco's hips all of a sudden, I don't see any particular downside of this. And I think that's a big plus to having this deal constructed, but also just to give anybody who follows this team some sort of direction into where the Reds are thinking and that they're not, you know, literally going to the no contracts, 1 year renewals and trade everybody who's not worth it model that I think we worried they were going to be into after the last couple of years of them operating that way. And so I think it also identifies the obvious, which is that the best talent and the best big league experience the Reds currently have right now in combination is that front three of their starting rotation. And, you know, Nick Lodolo's recent struggles aside, investing in guys like Green and Lodolo and Graham Ashcraft and getting them to be concrete pieces of the present and the future is where you have to start. And there's a whole lot of building that's got to be done after that. But at least being able to look up at a front office and an ownership group that has things that should be invested in and see them invest in it is a positive step in the right direction, even if the rest of it still needs so much damn work, it's absurd.
Right. It's like it's the first step in lots and lots of steps, and we need to keep that in mind and kind of, you know, keep moving forward. But, you know, I think it's exactly the right first step.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. And in other rotation news, we've got, I'll freely admit, I've got 6 minutes left on this particular edition of Zencaster before I run out of my, my allotted space. So we'll keep this brief, but, Andrew Abbott got promoted up to AAA Louisville today as well. When we talk about the future of the Reds and their starting pitching staff, Abbott, I think, is a big portion of that. And he's a guy who's still also just 23 years old, just like Hunter Green, a college product from University of Virginia, who at times has been as unhittable as any pitcher the Reds have had in their minor leagues in a long, long time. Stumbled a little bit after his promotion to AA last year, but then hit the ground running immediately this year with 36 strikeouts against three walks and just 15.1 innings pitched. The only runs he allowed, I think, came on a bloop in the center field when the center fielder lost it in the lights. A guy who I think probably is the single brightest pitching prospect the Reds have at this juncture, and a guy who I also happens to coincide with being the closest to the big leagues too. Arf, let's throw this to you. What are your thoughts on Andrew Abbott and what you've been able to glean from his performance so far this year?
Yeah, I've definitely been following him, just given where I live, close to where he went to school. So, you know, I got to watch him pitch some in college, and you know, saw him, especially his last year where he was striking everybody out. You know, I think he struck out like 10 guys in the College World Series against Tennessee, who was hitting the crap out of the ball at the time. And so, yeah, seeing him continue to do this in the minors wasn't that surprising. Seeing him do it like this in Double A is another level, you know. So like you mentioned earlier, like he did this in Single A and then got promoted and kind of got roughed up. And had a little bit of trouble his, you know, the last half of the season with Chattanooga. But, you know, I'm interested to see how he handles this promotion to AAA. You know, obviously I don't expect him to strike out 12 batters per start, but, you know, I think he'll pitch well this time around, you know, after this promotion. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how the Reds handle that, you know, if he keeps pitching well, if we see him at some point this season.
Yeah. And, you know, with Abbott in mind, I think it's a good time to point out that, yes, the Reds are 8-15, barely not 7-16. And it's been an incredibly frustrating start to this season. But despite the fact that all of that is absurdly frustrating and that they haven't broken out in surprise the way that we hoped there was a chance they would so far this year, the long con, the long game still remains intact, which is we're waiting for Elia De La Cruz. We're waiting for Christian Encarnacion Strand. We need to give Spencer Steer enough time to show what he truly is. Matt McClain looks on the cusp. Andrew Abbott is developing. They've signed Hunter Green. Nick Lodolo will get over his bumps. Graham Ashcraft has been tremendous. 2024 looks better than 2023. 2025 looks potentially better than 2024. It sucks that we are watching a franchise that only is willing to commit to 1 year nebulously in the future, and that's it to build for. But if that's the one thing that they're going to stick their, you know, their mantra to, it still seems to be progressing that way. We just got to be patient. And man, the first couple weeks, well, the last couple weeks of Reds baseball has made being patient testy once again. But we'll get there. We'll hopefully get there. And damn it, I think I'm still reached the point in my life where I chalk up the fact that I'm going to be watching it either way. So, well, for Arthur, for BK, I'm Wick. Thank you for catching up with us this week on Walks While Hunt. Like and subscribe where you find us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Podcast Squared. I don't even know where you can find us. Look us up, Walks While Hunt. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again this time next week.